What's up, fight fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, May 8th, 2023, and this week's episode, Sterling is gold, not silver. We'll talk about this past weekend's UFC event, UFC 288, and all of the highlights from that amazing main card. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news. The women's bantamweight title now has a new title challenger for next month's pay-per-view. And the women's featherweight queen of Bellator has re-signed a contract. And we'll cap it off by talking about this Saturday's upcoming event, UFC Charlotte, headlined by the heavyweight fight between Jailton Almeida and Jairzinho Rozenstruik. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Double G. How's it going? How are you doing? How was your weekend? Busy as usual?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. A lot of people ask me, what do you do when you're not reporting? And I'm like, I got a job, so I work. And then I rest to try to do more work. And then I try to watch my TV that I want to watch, you know, in the interim. What about you?
Oh, excuse me. I was yawning. That'll tell you what I was
doing. I'm sorry I bored you, Natalie.
No.
First two minutes of the show.
Yep. I mean, come on. Pick it up. Come on. Pick up the pace. No, because, you know, I just do crazy things. I'm like a little bit selfish, I guess. And so when my son goes to bed, I fall asleep with him because I'm tired. And so then I wake up at 2 a.m. and I think, like, I should probably go back to sleep, you know, so I can be ready for the day. But selfishly, Saturday night, I was like, I want to finish watching the fights. So at 2 a.m, I go down to the living room and finish watching the main event because I had to stop at round 3 to put my son to bed. So I think the sleeplessness has carried into Monday. So that's why I'm yelling.
It's like that, you know, when you're a student, the senioritis, it just carries over, right? A little bit of laziness. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, let's talk about these fights that you stayed up for. Let's see if it wakes you up. Aljamain Sterling, Henry Cejudo. I will say when all the previews for this fight was always about, you know, it's the chess match, it's the clash of styles, and how does the layoff affect Henry despite all of his accolades and the whole, you know, his reinvention as one of the top minds as a coach and in the corner, right? Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. And we really got essentially answers to all those questions, which I will say I don't think that we necessarily always get. So, I mean, sometimes we get surprised, but I think it's very rare that we literally get like a direct answer for all of these things. So to break down the fight as a whole, watching it on TV, and I know the understanding I have is that people in the arena without the commentary and without the benefit of all the angles of the cameras said that it looked more to be on Henry's side. The people watching the TV broadcast definitely saw Aljamain, and that's exactly what I felt. I felt like this was a competitive fight. No round was a blowout. But that being said, I felt like Aljamain was just getting to his spots more often. I felt like he was landing the more telling shots. And if anything, I felt like Henry just kept finding himself trying to catch up to Aljamain in a lot of those rounds. The first round I gave to Henry, obviously some of the later rounds close, but I still felt Aljamain was there. But if you tell me you give one of them to Henry, all right, I don't hate it. But yeah, my biggest takeaway from that, the length and the versatility, the switching of the stances, the awkward timing, all of that when Henry was trying to do his, you know, pick and pop from that karate stance, it really just seemed to unravel for him. And at a certain point, I was just kind of hoping Henry might step into the fire and just try to get it going. And instead, it felt like he was a little too patient throughout that fight. Aljamain, to his credit, kept the, you know, neutralized the wrestling for the most part. He kept himself from getting really pinned and taking damage and losing too much time when they got to the mat. Did a good job. I think the only thing is those calf kicks started to rack up, but he wore them well. He took them well. He kept his output high. And yeah, I was just impressed with that. Part of me wondered if 3 years earlier, does Henry get it in gear sooner? Does he try to do more? And that was my biggest takeaway, was that I felt like, if anything, that's where the layoff, we finally saw it come out of Henry. He was well conditioned, but when it came time for the rubber to meet the road, he didn't rally with that plan B. When I would have suggested, yeah, he was down, he needed something dramatic. And even, like, I think Daniel Cormier brought it up too. What about you?
Yeah, that was a great breakdown. I agree with you. So I didn't, from my television perspective, at 8 p.m. and then later at 2 a.m., I saw Aljo always ahead of Cejudo. And the size advantage was the biggest reason for that. I mean, when they're standing face to face leading up to the fight, I didn't think much of it, of Aljo being so much taller. But when you see the limbs being extended, and how easy it is for Sterling to touch Cejudo, and how hard it is for Cejudo to touch Sterling. You know, that was the story of the fight for me. Cejudo having trying to close the distance and never really being successful at it. He talked about wanting to fight Volkanovski, and that's someone who is really good at closing the distance, like excellent, probably the best at it. He's always shorter than his opponents too, and Cejudo might want to study Volkanovski's style a little bit more because that's something that could serve him well. I didn't see Cejudo having a whole lot of success. There were moments with the wrestling, but Sterling also was able to pretty much undo or neutralize most of those attempts. You know, Cejudo was doing a lot of holding Sterling's neck down, putting pressure on the neck, right? And DC and everyone is saying, "Oh, that's where his injury was. He had surgery. That's a good idea." You know, I gotta tell you, I was thinking, that's why I'm not a fighter, because if I was Cejudo and I was putting pressure on Aljo's neck, I would think like, "Oh man, I don't want to hurt his surgery site. Let me lay off." So in any case,
Okay, Roxanne
I
Modafferi.
know, right? There's no killer in me. So it was for me a pretty clear Sterling victory. Like I went back today and started rewatching, but I haven't finished the whole thing, and it was still looking to me like Aljo was in control for the most part. Even his facial expression, he looked calm. He never looked concerned. He never looked out of sorts. Cejudo was a little bit unsure, and of course he was able to adjust his game plan and have more success later, but it was never consistent enough to make me think that he won. You know, the split decision actually was a surprise to me. So
I agree too on that.
yeah, and just it was a very clear Sterling victory. He, you know, Cejudo in the post-fight press conference mentions like, you know, he was funky. Like it's not he's not just Funk Master. Well, you know, he sort of insulted him, but he's like he just kept moving, and I never knew if he was moving to set something up or just moving to move. But it was very hard to get to establish a pattern or anything like that, and you could see it. Cejudo was having a hard time. He stuck with it. He showed that he is who we always knew he was, and has proven to be, like against Marais and other opponents. But he was never able to turn it up to that extra level and get an advantage, a significant advantage over Aljo. So I still want to see Cejudo fight more, and it seems like he's calling out Merab already on Instagram today, or maybe it was yesterday. I'll toss it back to you because there is lots more to say about Merab Dvalishvili, whatever however you pronounce it, if you're interested in talking about the post fight.
The machine. I did want to ask you real quick, did you watch Henry's post-fight presser?
So I saw the beginning of it. I didn't get to finish it. But I saw right when they were asking him about Brandon Moreno, and so that's as far as I got.
If I'm being honest, Henry's post-fight press conference made me view everything different. And I want to give him a little bit of the caveat. He's emotional. Maybe he was just getting a lot of that off of his chest now that the fight had passed. And you know, you have a microphone, they want you to talk, you do things like, well, start talking. But he was very like, man, like Volkanovski was always my target. I was gonna, you know, beat Aljo and then I'm gonna beat Volkanovski. It just shocked me how much he was talking about Volkanovski being the target. And not that I don't understand that that was the ultimate goal, but you're talking about a UFC championship. You're talking about a guy who beat Corey Sandhagen in under a round. You're talking about the guy who even though he was losing to Peter Yan, came back and delivered in the rematch. And once again, I would argue, if we knew TJ Dillashaw was healthy, we probably would have seen it as a bigger mountain for Henry to climb. But let's be real, people felt like Aljamain had a layup. He got a one-arm fighter who shouldn't have been in there in TJ. So yep. I get it. You felt like maybe, you know, recency bias, like, oh, how good can he be? You know, it took him 10 minutes to get a guy with one arm. I get it. But I was really shocked that Henry, there was just so much emphasis on, oh, Volkanovski, I was going to get Volkanovski. If I'm not, I'm only in it to get Volkanovski. And I'm like, Henry, why'd you, then that makes me feel like you never took this fight seriously then. Maybe
seems
you didn't.
Like he didn't, yeah.
Yeah, and that maybe only he knows. Maybe that's just the moment, and I want to acknowledge that. But when I heard that, I was like, I get it. You're 2-division champion. Yes, gold medalist, but never lost the belts in the cage. But when I hear that, I do think, like, you did not. Maybe you trained, maybe you didn't miss a practice, maybe you ran those miles hard, hit the bag hard, but there was something missing, because now I'm thinking, well, had you taken it more seriously, would you have rallied, or did you just get, I don't know, I hate to say this because I feel like he's not that kind of athlete, but when I hear that, it did make me think, did you just get discouraged because you thought this is going to be a layup for you no matter what, you beat Aljo? Mm. And I know there's got to be a level of confidence you're supposed to have, but that's what I got when he just kept focusing so much on Volkanovski for quite a while, if I'm being honest, in that post-fight interview. I mean, that thing took a while. He wasn't in and out like some guys who lose.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my main takeaway. If he fights again, I'll be honest, I don't want to see him at 35. That's kind of like telling me you really want to date this blonde, but she's seeing someone, so you're just going to spend your time with the brunette. No, if that's what you want to pursue at 45, go pursue it. Go do that, because I really, as a fan, as a spectator, as someone who would invest time in it, I don't want this idea that, like, you're not putting it in because you're just thinking about the next guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's my big caveat, is like, if you didn't take Aljamain seriously, I really feel like you lost your chance to feel like you should run it with a Merab. Go fight Max Holloway, Arnold Allen, Brian Ortega, you know, those guys, and then show me that you're at 45, you're going to be that guy that you want to be. And then we could talk about Volkanovski, if that's what you could get to. But then I want to leave one final note. Now 2-29 fighters over 35, Henry's 36. The odds were not his, you know, in his favor going into it, right? And, you know, we discussed that, people touched on it. And once again, does it feel a little bit like a slightly younger Henry gets it going? Only he knows, but all these factors together, I think, play a significant, you know, part in the overall formula. And part of it, you're up against a guy who is hungry to defend it, the throne in Aljo. But that's my last note on Henry Cejudo. I want to ask you if you had anything more about Henry and his future before we talk about Aljo and the rest of Bantamweight.
You know, I didn't get to listen to the rest of that. So this is so interesting to learn that he was really admitting to looking past Sterling, essentially. And I think it showed. However, I'm still excited about him being back in the UFC. The cringe, you know, the walkout with the baby carrier and the pillows, like, it's funny. It's, you know, I mean, everyone knows it's silly, but it's just funny. The effort that goes into, I can just imagine him sitting there and telling his assistant or whoever, I need a pillow with Aljamain Sterling's face and there's a bit of pacifier in his mouth. I mean, like, there's effort that's going into this, right? So I appreciate the pre-fight gamesmanship, and for that reason, I'm glad he's back, and I hope he sticks around.
Low-key, does he still do the pillows?
I know, he did. I mean, it. Did you? Yeah, he did.
I didn't see him during fight week, but I don't know, like, if he still has them on, like, his show. I don't, you know, I know he does the thing with the schmo sometimes, and now he's doing, like, his breakdowns, but I feel like when I've seen, like, clips go by. I feel like I don't see the pillows. Maybe I need to look closer again, but
So,
just
okay,
saying.
I don't know what pillow thing he was doing when he wasn't fighting, but you remember when he brought out the pillows with like Dominic Cruz's face? And
Yes.
okay, so did you see what he did this time?
I saw a little bit.
Okay, yeah, so that's all I mean. I don't know about the other pillow stuff.
But look, he's got his deal with his friend or whatever in Arizona. He has like a pillow of his gold medal, of his coach's face
So he's got a
photoshopped
pillow
over
man
Captain
that could
America.
easily procure him pillows, I
I'm
think.
99% sure that
Yeah.
guy, whoever his pillow dude is, that guy gets so much free publicity. He probably just
Okay.
sends him
So
whatever.
this was probably easier than I thought. In any case.
My point is that I don't know if that's still his shtick or if he felt like, all right, we need something new. I can't just keep making pillows. People are over it.
No,
But anyway,
he made some pills. Anyway,
he made more?
he made
Okay.
more. He brought out like a baby carrier. You know, the kind that people carry their babies in, like a
Yes.
backpack. And then he had a pillow of Eljo with a pacifier in his
Oh,
mouth.
that's funny.
And he kicked that one. And then he kicked, I can't remember what the other ones were. Probably TJ, and I don't know who else.
I
But anyway,
remember when he did that,
in
yeah. He
any
brought it
case,
back,
yeah,
cool.
he, oh yeah, he brought it back.
I mean, look, once again, I'll say this. I think that Henry, I get it. He feels like he needs a thing. He's under 5'3". He can't necessarily look as intimidating as, let's say, Hamzat Chimaev. I'm gonna eat this guy's heart. When Hamzat says it, oh, holy cow, you know. Henry, respectfully, I'm not the biggest guy. I am noticeably taller than Henry. So if he told me, I'm gonna take your heart out, and I'm like, and I see him say that when he's standing next to like a Bilal Muhammad, someone big like that, I'd be like, calm down, shorty.
Yep.
So I get it. He wants a thing, and the cringe is his thing. I get it. I don't know if it necessarily hits the way I think he would want it to in terms of making him that crossover star, but I get it. It's his thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, look, he's got a lot to give. I don't mind seeing him back, but if we do it, I want to know that it's for. I don't want to hear about this. I was focused on Volkanovski. You focus on the guy in front of you because it was very clear from Jump Street they weren't interested in giving him Volkanovski up front. So he just, like I said, he had a shot to probably lock it in. He didn't. And that's where I stand with it.
Yep.
Now, Aljamain, I mean, it's pretty clear. I gotta say, that face off with O'Malley. I know Dana White got nervous and all that. Personally, I loved it. I was thinking, why can't we get more of this? I thought this was awesome. To be honest, after that fight with Henry, and in the hindsight of the press conference I just talked about, I felt like you're telling me we could have had this the whole time? And instead we had, Aljalame and all this other stuff Henry was spewing, and I'm like, no, we had some real heat the whole time that we missed out on. That's how I felt. I loved it. I thought they set up a great promo. It made me very excited to see Aljo and Sean O'Malley. It's very clear that's next. It's very clear Dana White thinks that's next. Aljo said September. Clearly Dana White needs something for August. Looks like August pay-per-view. They are targeting Boston. I'm here for it. Let's go. I don't have any issues. This is always going to be the thing, right? We've talked about it. Do you have anything to add?
No, that's a matchup that obviously those guys are chomping at the bit to get after each other. And, it would have been the same with had Cejudo won. Yeah, I do. I even as I was watching it, I was disappointed that they put O'Malley in there so fast because, let Sterling finish his interview. But okay, it happens. And it was definitely made for good TV, but it was just like, come on, guys, like relax. But Sean O'Malley came in right behind Sterling, and he wanted to get in his face and make a deal out of it. Now, can we talk about the jacket,
I mean, he had like that Eddie Murphy
Michael
delirious
Jackson,
red
beat
Thriller
it, Michael
jacket,
Jackson Thriller, yeah.
yeah. Marab gets it. Beautiful move by Marab. I was like, if I was there, I'd be like, that's what's up, man. You understood the assignment. Don't let yourself be forgotten right now.
That's
Good
right.
job.
It was freaking hilarious, dude. And I'm like watching at 2 in the morning, and I swear to God, I see Sean O'Malley take his jacket off, and someone helps him off with it, and I'm so dumb. All of a sudden, you see Marab standing there, and I was like, "Oh, Marab has a jacket just like Sean O'Malley. Oh my God, so
Well,
ridiculous."
played. Can I be real with you? Sometimes I don't like the you show up in a suit and you face off with the guy still in his gloves and shorts.
Yep.
Because it just kind of feels like, nah, this is unfair, you know. I
Yep.
almost feel like, nah, you know, you got your good suit, he's got his good suit, what have you, and it's a level playing field. Let's go. I appreciated that Sean was like, you got your shirt off. I've been working out too. Aljo takes his shirt off. I was like, all right, this is I like that. I thought it was a very the optics better move. I'm gonna say it like that. Look, I mean, obviously Sean O'Malley, he's kind of like Mr. Contender Series. It's very clear that he's the guy that I think a lot of people point to with respect to Jamal Hill, who should be that guy. But O'Malley and Macy Barber, I think Dana White kind of points at it. It's like, no, this is, you know, up and coming fighters, you want to be a Sean O'Malley. You want to be like, hey, you know, from Jump Street, if you can perform well and you want to put yourself out there and do your thing, this is everything you could be. So I do think that having a Sean O'Malley become a champion, once again, with respect to Jamal Hill, that could be the biggest endorsement to fighters on the free agent market that, like, hey, I know Bellator is offering you money. I know PFL is out there. I know ONE Championship wants you. But if you're a young up and comer, I want you on the Contender Series. You should want to do Contender Series because look what you could be. So I always understood, especially controversial or not, coming off that win over Petr Yan, that was always why Sean O'Malley was really locking this in. He's got his own vibe, I get it. He's very appeals to the Gen Z market, if I may say so. I totally get it. And then even Aljo, I think he's got that Ben Askren way of looking at it. All of this with the you know, like what's funny about him, like he's young and he smokes weed and he's like, I smoke weed too. What the heck are we talking about, guys? And I was like, thank you. It's like
That's fair.
being a stoner is not a thing like it used to be. It's legalized in America in most places.
Yep.
So that's what I would get at, is I think they are great foils to each other. Stylistically, how does Sean deal with the grappling on the feet? Can he do what he needs to against a guy like Aljo? We'll find out. That's just convo for another day. Before we move on, back to our jacket stealer, Marab. I don't know if you saw the Dana White one who did come before Henry at the presser, but he got asked about Marab, and I'll be honest, I don't think Dana was happy to talk about Marab.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it.
I got the impression that he was like, you know what, you're being an idiot, and I want you to, you know. And I get it. So, like, Corey Sandhagen, by the way, great meme, understood the assignment when the camera went to him on the
Yeah, that was
broadcast.
funny of the eyes.
Yeah, but you know, like, don't take yourself too seriously. It's not your night, cool. But you know, all this, oh well, it'll be Sandhagen versus Marab. I got the impression that Dana was like, don't talk to me about Marab. He's like, oh, the fight with Umar Nurmagomedov doesn't make sense. You not fighting Aljo doesn't make sense, Marab. That's the vibe I got from Dana White. And while I would tell you Marab versus Sandhagen makes all the sense in the world, hearing Dana talk about it, I would not be surprised if they give him the high risk, low reward of Umar Nurmagomedov. And not to say that personal feelings should get into this, but every now and then, quite simply, you get the feeling that personal feelings do play into this. And I just want to get your thoughts on that before we move on from Bantamweight.
Yeah, I was very surprised by that Dana was so annoyed. But if your number one contender is refusing to fight the champion, I'd be annoyed too. And then yeah, it is kind of like you're not getting to get a free pass just because you're buddies with the champ. You're holding up the show, you're making us do things we're not wanting to do. And so yeah, we're gonna feed you to the wolves essentially. I don't know. I'm not saying that's what would happen if he fought Umar, but yeah, I was very surprised by that considering it's Aljo's teammate. When you think about how respectful or unwilling Dana White was to bash someone like Kron Gracie, right? Like he gave him more respect than he gave the number one contender in the bantamweight division. So it's kind of odd. I'm not sure what that's about, but I guess he's frustrated by it all. It just doesn't Like, doesn't it seem weird that he wouldn't be a little nicer about it? I don't know.
You know what? I just got the feeling that, like, hey, we're trying to move this along, and now remember, everything's always about the next. Kind of like pro wrestling. You don't ever want to lose. That's why the Ngannou thing was so groundbreaking. You never want this idea that you are promoting the number two guy. You want the feeling that you are promoting the number one guy, because that's what makes more money. Do you want to pay to watch the second best guy, or do you want to pay to watch the best guy? It's not rocket science. I think this idea that Aljo and Merab don't settle it, now this suddenly raises questions, which I don't want to use the word devalues, but it does lower the heat if Aljo and Merab don't fight each other and we just don't have this clarity who really was the best bantamweight. Now, in time, do we get over all of these things? Absolutely. We've seen it many times. But for sure, I do think there's a level of that, and that's why Dana might be a little perturbed in this scenario. And yeah, look, does it lead to, quote, consequences? I'll say, I don't know, only they know. I'll tell you what, Umar's doing great. I want to see if he could be another, obviously, Nurmagomedov, and just kind of, you know, there's like a Dagestani of like the 12 weight classes, 10 of them have a guy who's like a top five guy right now. Several of them have champions, right? So it's like, you know, joining that party, would love to see it if he's that guy, because obviously they're so dominant in the sport. But, you know, if he's not there yet, he's not there yet. And I don't think it's fair to, like, oh, let's make Marab take it because he's not fighting his best friend who has helped him so much. I don't think that's right. But once again, I also understand that there's always feelings as well as business. And you're naive to say that that doesn't always have a that that doesn't have an effect from time to time. So I'll leave it at that. For the record, Corey and Marab, let's make that this summer or something. I'm ready to see it. Let's keep this ball rolling. Co-main event, Bilal Muhammad Gilbert Burns. Obviously early on it looks like Gilbert hurts his shoulder, might have been a little aggravated going in, is you know, something that was buzzing around. But the fact is, when you think about a lot of going into the fight, when I think about going into Friday night, people like, is Bilal walking a little tenderly on his ankle? Does it look swollen at the weigh-ins? He's coming off the Ramadan, fasting for a month, 3 week camp, takes on a guy who was fresh and hungry and looked like a killer in the fight with Jorge Masvidal less than a month ago. And then they do that for 5 rounds. And Bilal, I mean, once again, the injury is what it is. I did not feel like we got the same guy who fought Jorge. That being said, we didn't see a guy who was completely helpless out there. And Bilal really delivered for 25 minutes. I thought his cardio looked great. I thought he fought a great pace. I thought he had great shot selection. I thought he just did a good job of really staying ahead on the feet against Gilbert. And yeah, I was just very impressed with what Bilal delivered. Ankle looked just fine. Cardio looked just fine. Physically, he didn't look like a guy who hadn't been eating as much for a month. I thought he looked relatively big and strong out there, muscle-wise. So I was like, that's on a, you know, abbreviated camp? Once again, and we're going to talk about this. I mean, we'll talk about the title picture, which I'm not going to lie, I almost fell off my couch when I heard it. But that was just a great performance from Bilal. What about you?
Yeah, dude, I was extremely impressed with him, and feeling he looked amazing. Every round he looked amazing. He was completely full of energy from 1 to 5. Movement was great. Shot selection was excellent. Just completely on it. And you feel so much for Gilbert Burns, who was doing the UFC a favor, who said he didn't want to take a short notice, save the promotion fight, but ended up doing one anyway. And then he gets hurt, and that really sucks. Hopefully the UFC won't push him back down the line too far. I think Dana White was grateful in his post-fight press conference, knowing that Gilbert just came off of that Masvidal fight. So his stock doesn't fall too far, but Bilal's jumps way up. Excellent performance for him.
Yeah, I think it was great. My goodness, the so everyone, look, everyone assumed, all right, this guy just is about to bump out Colby Covington, And Dana White says, "The winner of this fight will get the next title shot after Colby Covington." I almost fell off the couch. I was
That was
just,
crazy, dude. Yeah.
I felt like, seriously? Like, look, and I do think there's, this is what I don't like about that. Do I believe that Bilal will fight for the title in his next fight? Yes. When I think about the whole wide world of things that could happen, let's say Colby or Leon gets injured before the fight. Not fight week, not, hey, we're already there, we need the backup. I mean, they fight in October, Leon rolls his ankle late August. Now you're talking, you gotta take an interim title fight before the undisputed one? I don't like this idea. I don't, or they fight. Have a war, guys get hurt, and it's like you tell me now this guy gonna take potentially like a year and a half off before his title fight? I mean, Sean O'Malley should get his fight within 12 months of his last fight. Think about now the wait potentially for a guy like Bilal.
Yeah, not fair.
And then not for nothing, everything that goes on at welterweight, you know, is Khamzat coming back to 170 for a fight with Kamaru? We obviously heard that thrown around, little stuff like that. All of these things, it's like I don't like that for considering it felt like, I don't know, kind of like the thing with Henry. You got this feeling that, like, okay, we get how they're feeling about Henry after he just kind of dipped after his fight and, you know, retired in 3 years and all that. Now you're saying, oh, Colby just disappears after the Masvidal fight, and now suddenly he's got this really preferential treatment over guys who have been fighting and putting in work. I just find that a little perplexing. Now, is it what it is? Absolutely. You know, when the fights come around, we're going to talk about them because that's what we do. But at least on paper, I really thought, okay, now is the time to make Colby Shavkat, Colby Gilbert, and just let these guys, you know, let him earn it, let everything marinate and become an even bigger fight. And instead, I get it. You feel like you get two fights instead of just one, potentially, if one of these guys knocks off Colby. But that being said, I felt like, okay, like, the heat is on for me now to want to watch Bilal and Leon, potentially. In a year and a half, I don't know that we're still going to be talking about this fight with Gilbert when you think about the arm and everything else. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I don't how long since Colby last fought? I mean,
It's he last fought in March of last year.
yeah, it's ridiculous. And I know that's what they said was going to be the next fight, but come on. Look what Bilal just did. I'm with you on that. I think it Colby is still, I guess, the in general a bigger MMA name. Well, not I guess he is. But you have a champ who's already done great things against Kamaru Usman twice. And this guy who just put on an amazing performance against another top contender and is ready to go. Colby's tweeting or Instagramming, whatever, that his fight, the one that's supposed to have happened with Leon Edwards, isn't gonna happen till the end of the year. Like, come on, guys. Like, you need to just step in and make this fight. I think stop giving love to Colby Covington. He's not important enough right now. Like, his time will come. We've seen all these big names coming back. Jones just did it. Cejudo just did it. Like, if he wants to wait and until end of the year, fine. But I don't think Leon Edwards and Bilal Muhammad should wait unless the holdup is on Leon Edwards' part. And maybe I just don't know.
I mean, I'm gonna go back to this. Let's say Khamzat fights Kamaru Usman, and they say, you know what? We want this at 170. Kamaru wants it 170. Khamzat makes 170. Let's say Khamzat potentially smokes Kamaru faster than Leon did it both times. You telling me you still like Bilal over Khamzat for the next title shot?
Well, yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is this not if you guys like Colby, how much do you like Khamzat if he does that?
Right.
My goodness. So that is what I don't like about this idea of he does all this work and now he's got to wait. I mean, it's gonna feel like about a year and a half, right?
Yeah,
Maybe,
not fair.
you know, objectively probably around 14 months, right? Like things got to go really perfect. Leon's saying he's not fighting till October. Then you gotta turn it around. I mean, I don't know. Anything could happen, right? I don't know. So that's my worry in this kind of scenario, but obviously anything could happen and we'll find out.
Yeah.
There we go. More stuff. Yan Shannon, first round finish of Jessica Andrade. As you know, I always like to say, Jessica Andrade, so gangster. Yan Shannon, that was pretty gangster. Yeah, let me just acknowledge that. That was a beautiful performance. Straight punches versus looping punches. That's the only thing I could really say. It felt like Jessica was just struggling with the range and the speed of Yan. Yan looked fantastic. The work she's put in with Alpha Male, kind of like her countryman Song Yadong, who won, just what was it, last week, 2 weeks ago. Clearly, it's paying off. We know she has the grappling, but now to put this all together the way she has, I'm just very impressed. And that was a very statement-making kind of fight. Do you have any thoughts? Because obviously we got to talk about what this means for her next.
Yeah, definitely. I was blown away by it. It reminded me almost exactly of Stipe versus Werdum. Werdum was chasing him down, and Stipe's moving backwards and launches one, and Yan Shonan did the same thing. Andrade was pushing forward recklessly. Yan Shonan, I mean, when you're moving backwards and you knock somebody out or nearly out and down, I mean, that's power right there. So super impressed, and like let's just take her to the top was my feeling.
Yeah, I'm with you there. With Yan Shannon, I guess my question, Amanda Lemos knocked out Marina Rodriguez. Or Rodriguez, sorry. I do acknowledge Verna Jandiroba kind of routed Marina on the prelims on Saturday night. But now, okay, so had Jessica not. Remember when Jessica lost to Erin Blanchfield, we're kind of like, if they make a fight for Zhang Weili tomorrow. It's probably Amanda Lemos, right? She's the one who beat the top contender, process of elimination, who's available, etc., etc. And then it looks like, okay, we're waiting for Jessica and Yan. Yan shocks her. Is it safe to say you feel like Yan Shonan on the back of her recent resume should be the one over someone like Lemos for the strawweight title?
Yeah, I definitely. I think so. It was look, it's sometimes being more recent helps. So she just had this amazing knockout against someone who's known for knocking other people out. And China versus China, like, there's a great story there. I think that's it. For me, it's no question.
I think there's also something to be said for the tiebreaker. Yan beat Andrade. You lost to Andrade, is what it is, right? Once again, if you go Lemos, I get it, but it's very clear the quote money fight to make should be Yan Shonan. Now, one thing I don't like, I think once again we talked about this. It's been 6 months since we saw Zhang Weili. We want her sooner rather than later. So at this point, with cards kind of booked all the way through July, are we feeling like August, September, Yan Shannon makes that turnaround? That should work, but once again, you never know who got what injury leading up to the fight. I feel like everything is there for a big fight. The whole Chinese Civil War kind of thing between the two. You always get the feeling that there's not personal beef, but somehow there's a little bit of you want what I've got, so we're just not friends kind of tension between the two. And and all of that together, stylistically, they're fighting the way they are. Everything's there to really enjoy this fight. Should it be in China? Absolutely. Do I think it's gonna be in China? I really don't. They're gonna put it co-main to somebody somewhere in the summer or early fall. And that's just going to be what it is. But it's a big fight. I'm very excited for it. What are your thoughts?
I'm very excited for it. Yeah, I'm completely on board and I want to see it get made fast. Let's go.
Yeah. If they do Boston Aljo, let's say. Okay, let's say they do Conor McGregor Chandler in September. Let's say. And I'm aware we're bending the rules to make that happen in
No.
September, but let's stop talking about that. Let's say August they do Aljo O'Malley, Whaley, Jan. Do you like that fight? Do you like that much time for Jan Chanan to recover and fight for the title?
What month?
August. June, July.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fair.
It's still early in May.
Yeah, I think
I'm
that's
not gonna
okay. She
lie, she might prefer September, October, but she's probably gonna. If they tell her you need to take this in August, she'll probably do it.
I think that's fair. She didn't get hurt. Not to say that that's all there is to it. The training camp is exhausting, but I'm okay with that. But what you don't want is this is, I wouldn't say it's an epic matchup, but it's an important one. It's significant. And so you want to make sure that both of them are going to be at their best. So does that make Yan Shonan not be at her best? One more month, does that make her better? If so, then I'd like her to have that. But I feel like she's pretty tough and ready to go.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Final note before we move on to some of the more current news. The main card started with the return after 3 years for Crone Gracie, who I read some stuff, I looked at some stuff, and I still wasn't completely sure why he just dipped for 3 years.
Yeah, it was hard to understand, right?
He was a man of few words all week, and it was just a lot of awkwardness. I saw the embedded clip. He had that awkwardness with Henry.
Yeah, Henry asked for it,
Yeah, Henry,
though.
okay, I'm not gonna lie. He kind of pulled that move where he asked, I know the woman he asked is, she's PR, but she is from Brazil. And
Yeah.
yeah, he kind of did that thing in Portuguese. And I'm like, Henry, there's no reason to hit the SAP button in this moment. But okay, look, he did. You know what? And then Crone has that against Mr. Charles Jourdain. What were your thoughts?
It was bizarre, man. Look, first of all, I agree with you about the story for the absence from the cage. It was the pandemic, and then I had to move and build a gym, and like he made it seem like moving to Montana was this like life altering, fight stopping endeavor. I didn't understand, but
I
okay.
don't know. Have you been to Montana?
I've
Might
never
take a
been. I
minute.
watch Yellowstone, but I've never been
Anyway,
to
I'm teasing. Go ahead.
Montana. In any case, in the cage, seemed super winded from the beginning. Was walking around. He just kind of looked like a hobo, like the way he was meandering in the cage, just sort of aimlessly. It was very bizarre. And then pulling guard, but even when he would pull guard successfully, was doing almost nothing with it. Jourdain was able to hit him from the top, and he just kept trying to pull guard, and that was it. And if he didn't have a good chin, Air Jourdain, which is a pretty awesome nickname, by the way, could have finished him and should have, considering how poorly he looked. But it was just bizarre. It's just bizarre. Like that, you thought you were ready to come back? Okay.
Yeah, I just Dana White says it felt like Crone was fighting with the 1995 version of Windows, you know what I mean? Not a nice new 2023 MacBook or what have you. I just it's kind of like with Dylan Danis, like he talks all this mess and then what you're pulling out of fights and what and this and that. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. With Crone and look, if he doesn't want to talk about whatever, what have you, if he just didn't want to fight, if he's like, I got a gym, I've been a successful gym owner, you gotta think he's always got a full-time job. There's a million Gracie Academies. When your last name's Gracie, I'm pretty sure you could get a job running one of them somewhere. I don't, okay, that's your business. Respectfully, I get it. I really do. But if you're gonna come out the, if you're gonna go out there, you're gonna be a little cagey, no pun intended, about everything, and you are going to deliver that kind of performance. I'm sorry, but you deserve a little bit of, I don't want to say deserve, but the criticism is gonna be warranted. It's gonna come your way, and you can't really make an argument about why you don't. Well, you're gonna have it coming because I thought that was a little bit like, as the viewing public, I can understand, like, you just did that and I paid $80 on pay-per-view. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it's a little, I don't know. Dana White might be like, hey, you know, like, we're gonna put you on the Paulo Costa program, and if we feel like you're not gonna perform, you are not getting your spot, okay?
Right.
Because that really was just, I mean, I was scratching my head. That made me think, like, what did you come? You know, there's all this butt scooting, which,
Yep.
you know, I feel like there's a reason you don't see it that much anymore. It's because
It's
everyone's supposed to be way
weird.
more well-rounded. So you're not supposed to be afraid if someone wants to pull guard.
Right.
But that's just, that was my takeaway from the Crone Jourdain. You know, I always say, like, you asked me, you know, some stuff, like with Triller. That was an interesting experience. Anyway, let's talk about the news, yeah?
Yeah.
So, Irene Aldana in for Juliana Pena. Juliana Pena apparently hurt her rib. They move things quickly. They get Aldana in there for a press conference on Friday. Aldana enters her first UFC title fight, 5-2 record going back to 2019. Obviously, she had that loss to Raquel Pennington at the start of that, lost to Holly Holm in 2020. She's riding back-to-back finishes, Yana Santos, Macy Chiasson. She beat Macy in November. Aldana was scheduled to fight next Saturday. Obviously, that fight gets a new main event. It was the rematch with Raquel Pennington. Raquel is now the backup. First title fight in about a month. She gets about a week or two extra to train. What are your thoughts on Irene versus Amanda?
I mean, this is the fight we thought we should that should have been made, right? We're talking last week or the week before when they maybe 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I feel like we were just talking about Peña Nunes and then all of a sudden it's not happening. So like I even saw them doing interviews together. And so this must have been an injury that she just had this past week. But in any case, not happy that she's injured, but this is completely the fight that I wanted to see anyway. It's what keeps the division fresh. Aldana's, it's her time. You know, we haven't seen this, so we know, look, we know Peña beat Nunes easily first time. Second time wasn't even close. Nunes just schooled her. So no, I didn't want to see it again. This makes sense. Aldana's a great striker. Let's see what happens. You know, she's training her grappling just like Grasso, presumably out of the same gym, so she should be able to defend whatever Nunes wants to do against the cage on the canvas. I'm excited for this fight. I really am. I'm glad it's happened, and I'm glad that Aldana isn't being, you know, she's okay. It's obviously a last minute short notice fight, but at least she's getting a little bit more time to prepare. That's the only caveat that bothers me, right? That's the only thing that bothers me is. Could she have been better if she had a full camp to prepare for Nunes, not just, you know, someone else, Pennington in this case. But still, I'm excited. And you know, Aldana and that team, they're not gonna say no to a fight, to a title fight. So I'm not surprised she took it, and I'm really, really hope she can put her best foot forward here.
I mean, obviously everything's there for Aldana now, right? I will say she has to make stylistically, the differences between Raquel and Amanda are not as drastic as those between Juliana and Irene for
Right.
the other side. So I acknowledge that. We talked about this. Even if Yair or Brandon lose their titles, you have the potential for at least a little bit for Mexican title holders. She's got to have that in her mind.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, her teammate Alexa, you know, I've asked her, she's like, oh, that's like my little sister, honestly. I've known her so long and we've been together, you know, in the team. All of that's got to be on her mind. For Amanda, this really does feel like it could be it. And, you know, I know they did the press conference. They still brought up the featherweight title, and I'm like, guys, what? I
Oh
almost
my
feel like
God.
you do it to troll Dana and the UFC. Like, hey, are you going to defend that featherweight title?
Jeez.
It's like knowing somebody lost their car and said, hey, can you give me a ride to work? It's like, you know,
Oh.
that's what that feels like when we bring up the featherweight title. It's like, are we still playing this game? I'll say this. I think that Amanda Nunes will retire without a fighting at 45 ever again. I think it's all for show. That's not too. Why do I bring this up? Because I do feel like Amanda, if you really want Penny again, go for it. If you really want a Ketlin or someone like that, go for it. But if you beat Aldana, you've showed me you've beaten the best of yesterday, today, and probably tomorrow. I don't see a Bantamweight who's coming up. I would have told you maybe Aspen Ladd, but Aspen and all that, making the weight, all this, I don't need to rehash that. Didn't pan out. Beating Jermaine Durandamy, beating Holly Holm, Cyborg, Rousey, Misha, all of that stuff. If you tell me Amanda says after June, I got nothing more to prove, I've done it all, and then some, do you have an argument? Because I don't.
No, I
I mean,
don't.
literally, we went a whole year, no Bantamweight title fights, and no one even brought it up because you knew there was nothing to talk about.
Yep.
I hate to
That's cold,
say, I
Benji. That's
mean,
cold.
no, I mean, what? This is
I'm
2 years
just
ago. You know,
kidding.
you remember.
Just kidding, man.
When have you ever said, man, that women's Bantamweight division is heating up?
I mean, it's been
It
a
hasn't
while.
happened in a long time.
Yeah.
Look, all of that is to say that I think Amanda's gonna deliver because I think that that's the athlete she is. That being said, as a business, it's kind of about how bad do you want it, not what else can I do. There's nothing else you could do. You've got the titles, you've swept the board, essentially. There's nothing else left. So that's where we're at, and that's just, I think, what it's gonna be going forward. So I like the fight, obviously. X's and O's, we'll get into that next month, but yeah, this is, like you said, the fight we all wanted, and I'm just I agree with it, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I'm with you.
By the way, Juliana Pena, Holly Holm, sometime, summer, fall, let's do it.
That's a good
I think
fight.
that's the fight that was always should have happened, plain and simple.
I like that matchmaker. I like that.
Thank you, Sean Shelby Gonzalez over here.
Yep.
Anyway, let's talk about the other women's goat. Chris Cyborg re-signs with Bellator. It's a multi-fight contract. The press release does specifically cite potential fights with Kat Zingano and Sarah McMahon, who recently made her debut. Obviously, Chris Cyborg was boxing. I'd like to bring this up. So we talk about, okay, I'm not saying that there's like a, like Conor got Floyd, Tyson Fury, and Ngannou got Tyson Fury, or he wants that, or Deontay Wilder. The quote unquote money fight for Cyborg, you'd think is what? Katie Taylor? Katie Taylor has a fight. Amanda Serrano has a fight. If they both win, it's expected they do a stadium in Ireland. That kind of eliminates this idea of I'm gonna box somebody who's a big deal in 2023 for Chris Cyborg. You know what I mean?
You're gonna have to educate me. Clarissa Shields, she's too big.
Yeah, that's
Okay.
more of a 55er. I think that Cyborg could fight 55, but even then, I feel like if you're gonna fight someone who's a PFL fighter, you would. Well,
Oh yes, that's right. That's right. PFL. I forgot
I
about
mean, not for nothing. I
PFL.
guess technically she could box Clarissa, but I think Clarissa just naturally boxes a little heavier.
Gotcha.
And I think that Chris Cyborg, even though it's a tough cut, I think she just likes 45. I think she feels strong enough and durable enough at 45 as opposed to maybe a Clarissa at a 50 or 48, you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
yeah.
Anyway, that my whole point of that is to say that it feels like the big fight in boxing is not there for Chris. And per sources that can't bring up, the what I've heard is that Cyborg and PFL were not close to a deal. I don't know if it's on money or terms, but the fact is that, and this is more recently, that just wasn't on in the cards right now. You get what I'm saying? So that all says to me, well, if you're Chris Cyborg, surveying the landscape, what opportunities do you have? Bellator was now the best choice. Now, could something still happen for Kayla? Yes. But now you cut Bellator a check. Now Kayla has to go to Bellator most likely, and how do they like that? All of that now becomes a whole thing. And so I do think that the best scenario with what's available is that fight or two in Bellator, particularly next for Cyborg. I don't think she's gonna box again. I think the next fight is MMA, and I'll set it up like that. What are your thoughts?
Interesting that it's all turned out this way, and I think there's a little bit of fatigue in my mind over the Chris, Kayla, where will they sign that we've been, conversations we've been having for it feels like the last 2 years, but probably not that long. I don't know how long it's been.
That's fair.
It's been a while, right? And it's because there was a promise of so much, but there was a potential for so much, right? The two of them fighting, Chris going to PFL, trying to do something there, or Kayla going to Bellator. What would that do for their? I mean, there's all this thing and the roses. Your question to Kayla with the roses, and then she ends up just staying there, and then now Chris just ends up staying at Bellator. Okay, fine. I do though still like Chris doing the old school fights with Zingano and McMahon. They're still putting on decent shows, and Cyborg is going to always try to knock people out. You can guarantee that. So I'm actually interested, excited about those two fights. I hope they get to make them. I hope there's no, USADA testing delays. Like, just fight each other. Let's go. As far as Kayla going to Bellator, is that like a real possibility, like for a one-off?
You know what? So she's got she becomes a free agent, I think, next year.
Okay.
Or, if things aren't scheduled, that's how it all plays out. Could Kayla, if they offer the money again? Absolutely. Is she worth the same amount of money after taking the loss to Larissa Pacheco? Only they know. Certainly that's going to be a question. I think it is more telling. You're hoping that Kayla fights on the first pay-per-view, has to fight on the first pay-per-view, and yet all of our plans for the first pay-per-view really don't feel anywhere close.
Nope.
Now, I'm gonna acknowledge this. There is the rumor out there about Francis Ngannou signing somewhere.
Right.
The impression you're getting potentially is PFL for Ngannou. Could it be Bellator? Yes, but I feel there's just more infrastructure to host Ngannou on a pay-per-view at PFL than there is in Bellator. Bellator almost, you're kind of acknowledging that you are re-entering just for Ngannou, whereas PFL, they were in the game before Ngannou hit the market. My point of that is to say that you could put Kayla on a pay-per-view later this year if Ngannou does fight, but now you're asking, isn't Ngannou going to box? Who's he going to box? When? It's May. Are you going to fight in July and try to fight in December? In which case, is there no pay-per-view we're going to see Kayla on until then? All of these questions are really very valid because it really does now become, and Kayla said it on Ariel Helwani's show, she becomes a free agent next year regardless. And she's supposed to get two fights this year. She has got zero, and we are approaching the halfway point. All of that is to say, what is the future look like for Kayla? Could it be Bellator? Yes. Could Ryzen or ONE Championship throw a lot of money? Maybe, but I will acknowledge I don't think that ONE or Ryzen really has this established weight class for her. Even UFC obviously doesn't. PFL and Bellator, they have it, but it kind of feels like you only have a handful of fights at 45 or 55 that are relevant. So all of that is to say that big picture for the future, Chris Cyborg, she's only got two veterans that I think make sense. I mean, Sarah McMahon beat the former title challenger Arlene Blanco. Outside of that, I mean, Sarah Collins, who beat a former Invicta champion, she only has a handful of fights. Everyone else is either younger or has already lost to Cyborg or is coming off a loss like Liam McCourt. It's like these are the only two women in the world who even seem to make sense outside of Amanda and Kayla for anybody, not just Chris. So it's like all of that collectively leads me to say that Chris Cyborg, take your victory lap, so to speak, fight the fights, and whatever happens, happens. But big picture, I think that Bellator, it's going to be, does Kayla get a fight this year, and how good can she look? How much can she get you to say she is worth a big price tag again? And we just go from there. Because one thing I will say, I get the impression that Kayla Harrison is not happy with the fact that it feels like 2020 again. She lost the championship, she felt a little down, but now she's like, all right, let's fight. And it's like, yeah, it's May, and we don't even have any ideas for you, probably for another 4 months. And that's got to feel very just ridiculous if you're Kayla Harrison. So I also get the impression that, you know, where last time she was like, well, you have to make a deal to let me fight Invicta, or, you know, I'm here to fight. You're in violation of my contract. I'm out. She isn't saying that. She's being more punctual and political about it. But that's the impression I'm getting. And what does that mean for Chris Cyborg? Maybe they could bring her in Bellator, Kayla, I mean. But there's a lot of politics that now we got to cut through before we get there. I know that was a long answer, longer than even I thought I was going to give, but that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's this thing that's like so weirdly.
There's so many contracts
Yeah,
now.
and you can just take an option and run with it all the way down, and then take another option and run it, all the possibilities. Like, there are so many possibilities, and yet it'll probably just end up amounting to nothing. You know, Cyborg will stay in her promotion, Kayla will probably just stay in hers. And even if Kayla moves somewhere else, they're probably, at this point, I'm throwing my hands in the air and saying they're probably never going to fight. And that's it. So Cyborg stays in Bellator for, you know, McMahon and Zingano, and then rides off into the sunset. That is a great career for her. And that's it. And no one's ever going to say, oh, but if only she fought Kayla Harrison. That's the question that will be, that's the asterisk that will be put on Kayla Harrison's resume. But Chris Cyborg does not need that fight.
Yeah, I think that that's a great way to put it. At this stage of the game,
At
I
this
think at
stage of the
this
game.
point, what else do we have? What else do we need? I don't know. Oh boy. And then this Saturday we have some fights. Friday they have fights, obviously. Bellator, Giga Mousasi comes back against Leon Edwards' brother Fabian, who's doing very well. We got more Grand Prix action. Brett Primus against Mansoor Barnaoui. This fight obviously in Paris, I believe. Look, good stuff, good names. I'm sure they're gonna deliver. And then Saturday we had the I mean, there's just been a lot of change-ups now. So obviously, you know, Anthony Smith, Johnny Walker in the co-main. The change was made: Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Jelton Almeida, striker versus grappler. Jairzinho, obviously extensive career in kickboxing, obviously has fought a ton of top-level guys in UFC. Jelton, Contender Series, I believe in 2019, got signed. He's got about four fights, I believe, in UFC. Finished all of them. Submissions, ground and pound. Very difficult guy to deal with if you're anywhere near the mat. Even if he's not trying to submit you, he's just put a few guys down with ground and pound. Striker versus grappler always feels like it's oversimplifying in 2023. But if I'm being real with you, you're probably thinking, what's one guy gonna do? Try to beat him striking. What's the other guy gonna do? Gonna try to focus on grappling. What are your thoughts?
I like that strategy. I'm on board with you. Yeah, I don't have an overwhelming amount of thoughts on this matchup, other than how you just put it, which is one's going to try his way, the other one's going to try his way, and we'll see who wins out. Just looking at Rozenstruik's recent resume, it's like not great. Lost to Curtis Blaydes in what, September 21. Lost to Volkov round one in June 22. Then he beat Chris Daukaus like pretty easily in December. So taking some time between fights here. Yeah, just one win in the last 2 years. That's or 2 wins in the last 2 years. Not great, but you know, heavyweights, like, it's the record is never as important, right? It's just, can you come in and do the thing that makes you a successful heavyweight in your next fight? So I think Rozenstruik's going to be trying to get a fast finish, and if Almeida comes in to try and take him down, I think Rozenstruik will be ready with maybe some uppercuts or some, you know, low punches as Almeida comes in low to take him down. So I'm gonna go with round one TKO Rosen Strike. Just
Oof.
that's my feeling. Let's see.
So I think about the fight with Curtis Blaydes. I acknowledge that Curtis is also doesn't get as much credit for his striking as I think he should. I think people are just like, every time Curtis is out there, you expect him to take him down. And then I think that opens up his very powerful and evolved striking. But I think that Jilton, well, he's not on that level. I think that he does have that advantage. Big guy, younger. I think this guy is young, hungry. I think he's going to get Jarzynho down and he's going to exploit that potential weakness. And you know what? I'm going to go second round submission.
Okay.
I think he is going to rear naked choke Jarzynho.
Oh my goodness.
Think
All
he's
right.
going to announce himself. He's going to be like, there's a new guy at heavyweight. Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have that. Like I said, obviously, Smith and Walker in the co-main. The card was supposed to feature Angela Hill and Mackenzie Dern. Those two are moved from this Saturday to the main event next Saturday. I saw the headline. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't read it. I believe they are a five rounder, but don't quote me on that. But the fact is, they had Mackenzie and Angela to be the main event. You know, I get it. Mackenzie's obviously headlined a lot, obviously very popular. Angela is always game, and you know, it's been a minute since she did this, but this is still par for the course for her, so I don't mind it. What about you?
Yeah, I don't mind it either. I like Angela Hill. She's fun and game when she gets in there. Mackenzie Dern has improved a lot with Jason Perillo. Striking's a lot better. She still has obviously the grappling advantage.
But she needs this one. I
Yeah,
think
she be
a few haven't gone her way.
That's right. That's right. She needs this one for sure. I think because she's got heavy hands, and so I don't think even if Angela Hill can find, ways to keep the distance, but, start winning by points, I think if Mackenzie Dern just gets her with a clean shot and either, I don't know if she'd finish her that way, but gets her with a clean shot and takes her down, I think that'll be all she wrote. So as much as I love Angela Hill, I think this one will go Mackenzie's way.
There we go. And then believe it or not, that's kind of it for May. And we get about a week or two off and then it's the pay-per-view. So very light in terms of the sandwich in May, but you know what? We still got some good stuff there. So yeah, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back next week.